Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to
love today.
just want to take a moment of silence for the people that lost their lives in Oklahoma due to this tragic tornado that just hit today. All right, let's go ahead.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleam?
You're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven, ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high, burning the loud as the Lord's sea. Forever, in the fasting prayer.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Good evening, everybody, on this lovely, lovely Chicago 90-degree temperature. In the words of my man Stevie Wonder, it is hotter than July up in here. This past weekend was Malcolm X's birthday. So today I decided to give a tribute to Malcolm X, do a little bio, some of his rare speeches, and send them off like that. I hope this does not offend people, and we're going to play a lot of harsh rhetoric, and I hope you enjoy it. You see, Malcolm X would be considered almost like a Tea Partier today if you hear his non-trust for the government and how the government is really killing people and assassinating people. These are the things that the Tea Parties are talking about now. So what we're going to do is just go ahead and check out Malcolm X,
Malcolm X is an extraordinary figure. for whom African Americans have this deep affinity.
Malcolm X is one of the most historic and most significant human beings in American history.
Malcolm Little was born May 19, 1925 in Omaha, Nebraska. His father, Earl Little, was an outspoken Baptist minister and supporter of Marcus Garvey's Back to Africa movement. His push for civil rights made him the target of death threats, forcing the family to move several times. In 1929, their home in Michigan was burned to the ground, and 2 years later, Earl was found dead. This was a devastating blow for Malcolm's mother, who was eventually committed to a mental institution. Her 8 children were sent to orphanages and foster homes. In school, Malcolm was a smart and focused student until he told his teacher in high school he wanted to become a lawyer.
He wanted to be a lawyer, but they told him that they said niggers don't get to be lawyers, so that's an unreasonable goal for a nigger. And so, to some extent, America created Malcolm X. So those are the forces that made him into the person that he eventually became.
He dropped out and moved to Boston. Over the next few years, he held various jobs and moved from Boston to Flint, Michigan, to Harlem and New York, and finally back to Boston. During this period, he started his street career as a pimp, drug dealer, and gambler. In 1946, he was arrested for burglary and sent to prison. In prison, he began reading everything he could get a hold of. Inspired by his brother Reginald's conversion to Islam, Malcolm read the teachings of Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. Malcolm dropped his slave name, Little, and chose X to represent his lost tribal name. By the time he was paroled in 1952, he had committed himself to the Nation of Islam. He was a very charismatic and powerful speaker who conveyed Elijah Muhammad's teaching to the masses. He was appointed national spokesman. During this time, membership increased from 500 to 30,000.
Malcolm emerged as this extraordinarily talented, itinerant minister, and he preached a creed of black superiority that blacks controlled themselves.
In 1958, Malcolm X married Betty X in Lansing, Michigan. The couple had 6 daughters, including twins Malak and Malika, born in 1965 after their father's death and named for him. Malcolm X rejected the civil rights movement's use of nonviolent protest. Instead, he encouraged black men to use any means necessary to protect themselves.
That Malcolm's clarion call for blacks to mobilize and fight against racism inspired millions of African Americans. Even those who disagreed with him, they respected him as a person, as a man.
Malcolm's faith was challenged when he found out that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had seduced several women in the Nation of Islam, and some had bore his children. In 1964, Malcolm X renounced Elijah Muhammad and left the Nation of Islam. He founded a religious organization, the Muslim Mosque, Incorporated, and took a pilgrimage to the Holy Land of Mecca, Saudi Arabia. In Mecca, he met people of all races he could call his brothers. He renamed himself El-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz and returned to the U.S. with new hope for the future. He founded the Organization of Afro-American Unity to unite blacks all over the world. Malcolm was seen as a threat to the Nation of Islam, and he was informed that members were plotting to assassinate him. His home was firebombed, but he and his family were unharmed. On February 21, 1965, Malcolm started a presentation at the Audubon Ballroom in New York when 3 gunmen ran up and shot him 15 times at close range. He was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. In his 39 years, Malcolm was constantly reinventing himself. At the end of his life, he was speaking to all races, not about civil rights, but human rights.
Malcolm's image of an uncompromising rebel who challenged and fought against racial injustice, and he was prepared to die for his beliefs.
He is a person that inspired millions of African Americans to figure out their self-worth, to elevate their self-esteem. He led people to command and demand more from the great country in which they live.
today, in our discussion of minority groups, we have with us two guests. One is Minister Malcolm X. Shabazz, one of the top leaders of the Nation of Islam, or the so-called Black Muslims. And we also have Mr. Herman Blake, one of the teaching assistants in the course. We will discuss today some of the goals and some of the strategies of the Nation of Islam. And I wonder if Mr. Blake might start it off by asking Mr. Shabazz a question.
Minister Malcolm, the thing that I thought might be good for starting it off is to talk about one of the most pervasive beliefs in the general society about the Nation of Islam, and that is that it is an organization dedicated to the use of violent means to attain its goals. The question I have is, how true is this, and why do you think it persists in society?
Well, the Muslims who have accepted the religion of Islam and follow the religious guidance of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad have never bombed any churches, have never murdered any little girls, as was done in Birmingham, have never lynched anybody, have never at any time been guilty of initiating any aggressive acts of violence during the entire 33 years or more that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been teaching us. The charge of violence against us actually stems from the guilt complex that exists in the conscious and subconscious minds of most white people in this country. They know that they've been violent in their brutality against Negroes, and they feel that someday the Negro is going to wake up and try and do unto them as they have done unto, do unto the whites as the whites have done unto us. We aren't a violent group. We do, we are taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to be, to obey the law, to respect everyone who respects us. We're taught to display courtesy, to be polite. But we're also taught that at any time anyone in any way inflicts or seeks to inflict violence upon us, we are within our religious rights to retaliate in self-defense to the maximum degree of our ability. We never initiate any violence upon anyone, but if anyone attacks us, we reserve the right to defend ourselves. So to accuse us of being violent is like accusing a man who is being lynched, who is being hung on a tree, simply because he struggles vigorously against his lyncher. The victim is accused of violence, but the lyncher is never accused of violence. And I only point this out because the various racist groups that are set up in this country by whites and who have actually practiced violence against blacks for 400 years are never associated or identified or made synonymous with the term violence. The whites speak of Muslims almost synonymously with violence. Whenever Muslims are mentioned by them, violence is brought up. But it's not connected with any other. This is a sort of a propaganda tactic, or what I would call psychological warfare, to in some way make the image of the Muslim in this country be a violent image rather than a religious image.
What's interesting is that members of the Nation of Islam have not used violence, even when black Americans were attacked. How do you account for this? Does this in any way contradict some of the basic premises of your movement?
I don't know how you mean.
Well, you maintain, for example, that you will not, or that you should not use violence unless
unless
you are attacked by the white man. And I think we can note in the last several years, certainly, dozens and dozens and dozens of instances in which Negroes have been attacked, killed in some instances.
You mean in these demonstrations?
These demonstrations and the bombings, for example, recently in Birmingham, we killed four little Negro girls. And what interests me is the fact that the Nation of Islam has not done anything to retaliate.
I think you should be happy.
No. The important thing is, does your lack of action contradict any of your basic principles?
I'll explain it. You should be happy. That Muslims who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, number one, don't believe in any form of integration, and who and believe that every mention of the word integration by whites, whether it be from the mouth of Kennedy on down to the mouth of the lowest, raggediest white liberal in the street who is beatnik-like involving himself in these integration efforts, if we believed in it, we would integrate and we would fight anybody who got in our way or made any effort whatsoever to stop us from integrating. If we really believed that the law of the land, the Supreme Court, and other so-called judicial bodies were for real when they talked about integration, we would integrate and know that the law was on our side. And any effort we made to demonstrate towards integration, why, we would know the law should be on our side. If it's the law, if it is the law of the land, then the demonstrators are within the law. And the discriminators are against the law. But to show you the hypocrisy of the law, when Negroes demonstrate for integration, instead of arresting the discriminators, the law arrests the demonstrators. So this is a foolish move on the part of Negroes. And when you foolishly get yourself involved with an enemy, then whatever comes upon you, that's your business. As Muslims, we believe that separation is the best way and the only sensible way, not integration. And but on the other hand, when we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is picked on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says it's supposed to be is, then that black man should kill that dog, or any two-legged dog who sicks the dog on.
Should other black men help that particular person who was attacked?
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. That if other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And that's the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Minister Malcolm, let me, on the basis of your two remarks, ask a very strong question. One, is it then your assertion that the laws with respect to how Negroes are supposed to have equal opportunity and equal rights in this country are not meaningful or believed by whites? And secondly, what then is your opinion and attitude toward the civil rights movement in general, and particularly the Reverend Martin Luther King and his philosophy of nonviolent direct action?
If the white people really passed meaningful laws. It would not be necessary to pass any more laws. There are already enough laws on the law books to protect an American citizen. You only need additional laws when you're dealing with someone who is not regarded as an American citizen. But whites are so hypocritical. They don't want to admit that this black man is not a citizen. So they classify him as a second-class citizen to get around making him a real citizen. If he was a real citizen, you'd need no more laws. You'd need no civil rights legislation. Civil rights, when you have civil rights, you have citizenship. It's automatic. White people don't need laws to protect their citizenship because they're citizens. But they don't want to tell us we're not citizens. And at the same time, they don't want to pass laws that are meaningful enough to protect us as if we were citizens. And the Supreme Court desegregation decision is the best example I know. That's a law from the Supreme Court. 10 years have gone by. No desegregated schools. It hasn't been implemented beyond, I think, 9% in 10 years. So this just shows you the hypocrisy of the American white man. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. And for this reason, we who are Muslims, that is, who believe in the religion of Islam, who believe in God, we don't believe that black people will ever get any laws, get any problem with laws being passed or new persons being put in office, white liberals being put in office. There is nothing that the white man will ever do to bring about true, sincere citizenship or civil rights recognition for black people in this country. Nothing will they ever do. They will always talk it, but they won't practice it. And with the Supreme Court, if the NAACP can tell me that they want a desegregation decision for me 10 years ago, but yet the schools haven't been desegregated, as I say, this is a victory with no victory. It's a victory that you can talk about, but it's a victory you can't show me. So if you represent the NAACP and you are telling me about this great victory you won for me, when I look at you, I have to conclude that either you have been duped yourself or else you are trying to dupe me. And in most instances where the civil rights struggle is involved, there is no civil rights leader can point to me one concrete gain, practical gain, that black people have made in the civil rights field in this country, not only during the past 10 years, but during the past 100 years.
Now, the other part was with respect to Mr. King and the nonviolent direct action.
Well, I will let Jimmy Baldwin and John Killens and Lou Lomax, the writers, answer that. Speaking right after this church was bombed, in Birmingham, Christian church was bombed in Birmingham by Christians too, mind you, and these four little girls were murdered. John Killens and James Baldwin and Lomax and the Negro writers and actors had a meeting at the town hall in New York, and Killen pointed out concerning these murders of these little girls, said the killings had raised doubts about the intelligence of the nonviolence in the civil rights struggle. He went on to declare that he could no longer be asked to love those who persecuted and killed Negroes. He also, and the writer, Mr. Handler, who's describing this, said that Killens, it was not clear concerning Killens' remarks to his audience that he was breaking with the, it was clear, rather, to his audience that he was breaking with the doctrine of the Reverend Martin Luther King's philosophy that as Christians, Negroes should love their fellow man in a truly religious sense. Now, James Baldwin, speaking on that same platform, said, and I was present during this entire affair, asserted that the American people shared a collective guilt for the persecution of Negroes, much as Germans did because of their silence during the Nazi persecution. He denounced President Kennedy for what he termed Kennedy's lack of passion in the civil rights struggle. Mr. Baldwin said that there could no longer be a Republican Party for the Negro people as long as it listed a Barry Goldwater, nor a Democratic Party for the Negro people with a Senator Eastland on its roster. He asserted that the federal government acted swiftly and energetically, that unless the federal government acted swiftly and energetically, future slaughter would make Birmingham look like a dress rehearsal. What do I think about King's attitude? King's right-hand man, Wyatt Walker,
at King's Convention, according to the New York Times on September the 26th, said, we have been duped, meaning these persons involved in the civil rights struggle, of which King is the symbolic leader. His right-hand man says, and I quote, we have been duped, or have duped ourselves, into believing that the chains have been broken, when in truth we have only been chained more securely. Half freedom has in many instances been worse than no freedom at all. Why, don't ask me what I think about their struggle. I can tell you what they think about their struggle. And they are pointing out that it is becoming more difficult every day for the civil rights leaders to keep the masses of black people nonviolent and long-suffering and patient and keep them from becoming disenchanted. I hope that answers your question.
Well, now there's a new party which has started on the East Coast called the Freedom Now Party, an all-black organization. Would you comment upon this and also upon the possibility that the Nation of Islam might begin to turn some of its attention to the political arena in view of the fact that it is in the political arena that Negroes have not been able to in any way get justice, as has been pointed out in your previous statement?
I'm not familiar with the Freedom Now Party. I'm not too familiar with politics, period, only that in the sense that white politicians have usually been very hypocritical where the so-called Negroes are concerned. So I'm a bit disenchanted with politicians and politics. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad is a religious man, and his teaching is religious, and his solutions are religious. The Freedom Now Party, from what I understand, is headed by a man named, a lawyer, named Conrad Lynn. Mm-hmm. I know him. He probably means well. Before passing an opinion on what it is he's trying to do, I would like to analyze it and see who's subsidizing him, see who his friends are, especially who his white friends are. And after a careful analysis, if I could conclude that there was no white support, I would be inclined to have confidence in it. But if I saw him leaning too heavily upon his white liberal friends for support, then I'd be suspicious of that too. The Muslims, in my opinion, represent an all-black party. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad pointed out at before 10,000 in Philadelphia on September the 29th at a rally that we were having that in 1964 the black people should band together and do something about selecting representatives, black representatives, politically, who have the rights and the best interests of the black people at heart, and that we should also unite together and sweep out of office all of the black political puppets who are used by the white power structure to continue white supremacy in our communities.
In that regard, would you include Congressman Dawson, for example, from Chicago, and some of the people who represent him on the Chicago City Council?
In which regard?
In the area of acting as a puppet.
I don't know what Mr. Muhammad's opinion is of Congressman Dawson. They both live right there in the city of Chicago together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what his opinion is of Congressman Dawson. I'm suspicious of any Negro, be he politician, be he clergyman, or civic leader who is constantly patted on the back by whites. I have a tendency to lead toward the Negro politician who is constantly condemned by the white power structure. This is my thought pattern. I'm giving you an insight of it.
You, though, mentioned Mr. Lynn and saying you'd like to know who his white friends are. Now, I'm wondering if you didn't make a contradictory statement in Muslim terms by using white and friend in the same phrase.
I use friend in quotes.
I see. In other words, if a black man cannot have a white man as a friend.
He may have a white man who's friendly, but being friendly and being a friend, I think, are two different things. I think there are many whites who act friendly toward Negroes. A fox acts friendly toward the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the fox is the one who ends up with the lamb chop on his plate.
Mm-hmm.
The wolf doesn't act friendly, and therefore the wolf has more difficulty in getting the lamb chop in his plate.
I'd like to point out, though, that...
And I say that because It is usually the, if you study the structure of the Negro community, economically, politically, civically, psychologically, and otherwise, it's controlled by the white liberal, who usually poses as the friend of the Negro, who actually differs from the white conservative in the same way that the fox differs from the wolf. Their appetite is the same. Their motives are the same. It's only their mannerisms and methods that differ.
I would agree that no doubt there have been a large number of whites who have posed as liberals and as friends of the Negro and who have time and again betrayed the Negro. On the other hand, I think one could point to a large number of whites who have struggled for civil rights, for equality, and have got little or nothing out of it, other than quite a few bruises.
Give me an example.
Well, the large number of white students who have gone into the South, for example, working for SNCC and other organizations.
Not working for SNCC or other organizations, but working for the white political machines who benefit by the voting efforts of Negroes.
Okay. I'll be more specific. I would cite Herbert Hill, for example, as as a kind of person who has championed Negro job rights, for example, in New York City and elsewhere. He has fought the political machine.
First time I met Herbert Hill personally was when they were picketing to stop the working on the Harlem Hospital in Harlem. Negroes for 10 years had to fight the city to get an annex built on the Harlem Hospital, because in Harlem we need a hospital more so than anything else. Our people are sick, plus we do a lot of cutting and shooting of each other, though we profess to be nonviolent. And Herbert Hill brought his forces out and stopped the working on that site. This is the first time I ever saw him. Then when work was brought to a halt on a hospital in Harlem, the same was tried to stop the work at the Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn, which is predominantly white. They were out there for 3 months during the summer. Couldn't stop anything. And I never saw Herbert Hill out there one time. Now, whenever it takes a stoppage of something that's going to affect the white man, you find the white liberal absent. But when it involves something that primarily will affect the best interests of black people and black people only, then that white liberal is present. Herbert Hill is the labor secretary for the NAACP. Mm-hmm. And if he was interested in black people, he would prepare a black man with the type of knowledge and understanding of the labor troubles involving black people that would enable a black man to sit in the same position as Secretary of Labor or Labor Secretary in the NAACP. I'm suspicious of whites who join Negroes and always have to be in the lead, who always have to be the head, who always have to be at the top in Negro organizations. Those whites who really have the interest of blacks at heart, let them give some advice to some Negroes and stand on the sideline. But don't join the organization and then get at the head of it and pose as a friend of Negroes.
Well, I would defend his sincerity and his commitment. And more than that, I would say that just because a person is a Negro or a black American does not mean he's going to struggle for Negro rights or for jobs for Negroes or anything else. I think that today you could point to a large number of Negro leaders who have consistently betrayed Negroes in a whole host of areas.
They aren't really Negro leaders. These are puppets that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. These are parrots that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. You can't name me a Negro leader who has been betrayed Negroes, who has not been endorsed, sanctioned, subsidized, and supported by the white liberals.
Minister Malcolm, I'd like to.
Well, I could cite one example. Would be Congressman Dawson, for example, in Chicago. In Chicago, a large number of liberals located in the Hyde Park District have consistently fought Dawson and his betrayals of the Negro, and they've also fought some of the people who represent Dawson on the Chicago City Council.
The only Negro I know who is constantly fought, only Negro politician that I know who is constantly fought by white liberals is Adam Clayton Powell. Mm-hmm. And they call him a racist because he speaks so bluntly on the race issue. But I'm not, as I said, not too familiar with Dawson and his work.
Let me return to the Nation of Islam per se, Minister, by raising a question which struck me as a result of reading some of Baldwin's work, namely The Fire Next Time. Baldwin pointed out that in Harlem for many years he had passed the street corners and the soap boxes and heard people speaking from these platforms who were known as black nationalists, and nobody was listening. And he said all of a sudden he realized that people were beginning to listen to the Muslim speakers on the street corners in Harlem. The message essentially was the same, but it was that now many, many people were listening to what this message was. And you pointed out that the Nation of Islam has been in the picture for about 33 years. What is it, in your judgment, that has caused this tremendous amount of support that the Nation of Islam has garnered in the Negro community in, say, the last 10 years?
When you put a seed in the soil, it remains beneath the soil until the season changes. And when the season changes, that the seasonal change automatically brings about, rather atmospheric conditions bring about a seasonal change that makes that seed come up or crop grow in its appointed time. And all over this world today, God himself has brought about political changes, a political atmosphere, sociological, social atmosphere, economic atmosphere. These economic conditions, these political conditions and social conditions combine to bring about a situation that is making black people in America more receptive, their mind more fertile to the seed of truth that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been planting for 30-some years, and this is springing up today and causing our people to see and understand now what they couldn't see and understand before.
What is the nature of this situation which is making black people more receptive?
In the past, say, 15 years, how the nations have emerged, dark nations have emerged in Africa. Prior to 10 years ago, most Negroes identified Africa with a savage, jungle-like place. And whenever you mentioned the word African, in their mind's eye, they could see the image of someone running around with a spear, with no language. You'd say Ugga Bugga Boo or Bwana or something, and who'd be in a jungle running from lions or chasing lions. But then when after the war, when the United Nations was set up in New York City, black people began to look at men like Tom Mboya. They began to look at men like Nkrumah. They begin to see men like Lumumba. They begin to see men like Nasser. They begin to see these Belawa and Azikwe, who could exchange intellectually with whites on an international level in a political form and hold their own. This made the black people in this country realize that what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had been teaching all the time actually had substance. And they begin to turn it over in their mind and see that what he was saying had more weight to it than what these other Negroes were saying. And they began to identify themselves with the black world and the black struggle more closely than they identified themselves with this so-called white world.
Let me ask you a question with respect to a statement which Essien Udom quotes as being on a bulletin board in the University of Islam in Chicago by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. According to Essien, Mr. Muhammad states, "Up, you mighty race. You can accomplish what you willed. Build your future on these foundations, freedom, justice, and equality." What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man, and where and when is it to be attained?
Well, take equality first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't teach us to associate equality with whites. Equality has nothing to do with whites. We don't want to be equal with the white man. He's not the criteria or yardstick by which equality is measured. He's not in a position to tell us we are equal. It's not his right. It's not his to do. Equality, we want equality. We had equality before the white man was created. We had equality before the white man came into existence. And we want equality whether the white man is on this earth or not. Equality means the opportunity to develop all of our dormant potential, all of our dormant capability. And in developing this dormant capability, the right and the ability to stand on this earth on some land of our own and bring about a civilization and a society in which we will be completely independent, complete freedom to take care of the needs, to take care of the wants and the likes and the dislikes of our people, to establish our own nation, our own society, our own heaven, our own future. This is what we mean by freedom, by equality, and justice means as you sow, so shall you reap. If you do wrong, you'll get wrong in return. And if you do right, you'll get right in return. When you're in your own nation, in your own land, you're in a position to get justice. But when you're in another man's country, in another man's land, under another man's flag, and under another man's government, and under another man's court system, you have to look to that other man for justice, and you'll never get it. And Negroes in this country probably are authorities on that.
Yeah. To what extent does this formulation approach that expounded by Zionists? They, for example, many Zionists maintain they could never expect justice in the Tsarist courts and the courts found in other countries in Eastern Europe and so on. And they decided that it would be wise to establish a separate state in Israel.
And all of the world powers got together, the white world powers, I should say, got together and helped all of these white Jews to establish a separate state in the heart of a dark-skinned people's territory. And if white people can get together and let other whites, help other whites to establish an independent nation right in the midst of dark-skinned people, and then we don't see where white people should be so much against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's solution, not of setting up an independent dark nation in a white people's property, but he's asking the opportunity to set up an independent nation in our own on our own continent. Let us leave America and go back home among our own people on our own land and set up our own independent society. But all he says is that this government, which made us slaves, should supply the transportation for us to get back home and give us all of the machinery and the tools necessary for us to till the soil and establish our own agricultural system to feed and clothe our people, our own economy, and in some way become an independent people among our own people on our own continent. This is intelligent, and Zionists should never criticize us.
You say then that the United States is not the black man's country.
Definitely
American
not.
Laws
no,
are
no.
not black man's laws.
No.
So, American laws are not the black man's laws.
Well, the laws here in America were made white by white people for the benefit of white people. The Constitution was written by whites for the benefit of whites. It was never written for the benefit of blacks. And when you read the Constitution, I think in Article 1, Section 2, or Section 1, Article 1, and it's in the Constitution, it says that it classifies black people as three-fifths of a man. Three-fifths of a man, subhuman, less than a human being. It relegates us to the level of cattle, hogs, chickens, cows, a commodity that could be bought and sold at the will of the master. No, it was written by whites for the benefit of whites and to the detriment of blacks. And when a black man stands up talking about his constitutional rights, he's out of his mind.
Now, Minister Malcolm, in our textbook, which the students have read, supposedly, there is a statement, which is a quotation from Essien and essentially that from Lincoln, to the effect that the Nation of Islam does not have a great deal of support in the Negro community in this country by and large. And a recent national poll of American Negroes found that leaders and rank and file, according to their statistics, supported the Reverend Martin Luther King somewhere over 90%, whereas the support and favorable rating that they gave Minister Muhammad was less than 20%, and somewhere around 45% of them gave an unfavorable rating to Mr. Muhammad. What would your response be in terms of Baldwin's statement that this is a growing thing and the kinds of evidence that we have that there isn't much to it?
Well, that statement I made just made concerning the Constitution is Article 1, Section 2 in the Constitution, mm-hmm. where it classifies us as chattel. Baldwin did point out that Mr. Muhammad has the only grassroots support and is the only one whose whole following operates or functions on a mass vehicle. And I think Baldwin told Dr. Kenneth Clark that Martin Luther King is at the end of his rope. Now, concerning the poll taken by Newsweek magazine, I think you said that this was the leaders who said that, who went with King and against Mr. Muhammad around 90%. I just told you a little while ago, these leaders that they call leaders, this included Lena Horne, this included Dick Gregory, and this included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and or over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear. And it is an honor, actually, that they endorsed Dr. Martin Luther King and were against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's actually an honor. Now, when you say that they also, in this same Newsweek poll magazine, I think the pollster said that he went into the Negro community and asked about the Muslims. And many Negroes whom he asked said, well, I never heard of the Muslims. Who are they? You know,
this is the rank and file we're talking
about. Oh, yeah.
About
now, when they got down to the rank and file, this was the answers that they got. This is the equivalent to the situation in Kenya during the Mau Mau uprising when many frightened whites in Kenya, Africa, would go among the Africans and ask them, what about the Mau Mau? And the African would say, I never heard of them. And the same white man who would ask the African this question and very naively believe what the African said, when he went to bed that night, he would lose his head. And usually the one who took his head was the same African who told him that afternoon he had never heard of the Mau Mau.
Except in the Newsweek poll, they used Negro interviewers.
You'll find that oftentimes Negroes are as much on guard around Negro interviewers who usually represent the bourgeois element of Negroes as they are on guard around whites. Usually Negroes know that when this bourgeois Negro walks through the door, he is not doing something that he's initiated himself, but he's involved in something in which the white man is the absolute author of and has sent him to the Negro community for some information. And when they give that Negro some information, usually they give him the information that they want the white want him to take back to the white man, because that's who he's going to take it back to.
4 more minutes.
Our time is just about up, Minister Malcolm, and perhaps you could summarize and conclude by giving us, in your opinion, or in the opinion of Mr. Elijah Muhammad, what would be the ideal solution to the racial problem in the United States today?
Well, on Thursday, October the 3rd, the New York Tribune, in an editorial, pointed out in Boston, in an article called The Civil Rights Iceberg, they pointed out how Kennedy had realized that beneath the water, the civil rights whole problem was political suicide. Because in his own hometown, the head of the Board of Education, a woman named Mrs. Hicks, was running against the NAACP philosophy, and she swept aside all other opposition. The whole white community supported her in opposition to the NAACP's desire for integrated schools, integrated housing, and otherwise. So I say that to say this, that even the Jewish community, which is supposed to be pro-liberal, went against the NAACP. Whites are against integration in practice, but they're for it in principle. So the only solution is separation. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that this can be brought about simply by letting our people be exposed to the truth about ourselves, about the white man, about our history and our condition in this country. And once we are exposed to the complete truth as things about things as they actually exist in this country, the masses of black people will choose complete separation from this entire system, political system, economic system, social system, and whatever other aspect or description you, adjective you want to attach to it. Let us go back home to our own people, live among our own kind, and solve our own problems ourselves. And if the white man doesn't want us to go back to our own people and live in our own country, then since we can't get along together in peace on this country with white people, Let us separate part of this continent, migrate to that separate territory. Let the government give us everything we need to establish our own independent economic system and society, and thereby we'll be able to solve our own problems ourselves and prove that we are human beings and a part of the human family and can do for ourselves what other humans have done for themselves. And then we'll be able to stop blaming the white man for what he has done and stop begging the white man to solve our problems. We'll be able to solve our problems ourselves.
Thank you very much. That's it.
Hello, Jesus children, Jesus loves you, Jesus children. Hello, children, Jesus loves you of America. Are you hearing what he's saying? Are you feeling what you're praying? Are you healing faith, feeling what you say inside? You better tell your story back. And if you like it, it will come to pass. Tell me,
of America. Jesus, children of America. better tell your story well, Jesus, Children of America. Let's go ahead and get a Malcolm X and Martin Luther King debate. Let's keep it moving. Let's see what those two great philosophers of the 60s have to say about the condition of Black America.
The white man pays Reverend Martin Luther King, subsidizes Reverend Martin Luther King, so that Reverend Martin Luther King can continue to teach the Negroes to be defenseless. That's what you mean by nonviolent. Be defenseless. Be defenseless in the face of one of the most cruel beasts that has ever taken the people into captivity. That's this American white man. And they have proved it throughout the country by the police dogs and the police clubs. 100 years ago, they used to put on a white sheet and use a bloodhound against Negroes. Today, they have taken off the white sheet and put on police uniforms. They've traded in the bloodhounds for police dogs, and they're still doing the same thing. And just as Uncle Tom, back during slavery, used to keep the Negroes from resisting the bloodhound or resisting the Ku Klux Klan by teaching them to love their enemy or pray for those who use them despitefully, today Martin Luther King is just a 20th century or modern Uncle Tom or a religious Uncle Tom who is doing the same thing today to keep Negroes defenseless in the face of attack that Uncle Tom did on the plantation to keep those Negroes defenseless in the face of the attack of the Klan in that
day. Well, I don't think of love as, in this context, as emotional bosh. I don't think of it as a weak force. But I think of love as something strong and that organizes itself into powerful direct action. Now, this is what I tried to teach in the struggle in the South, that we are not engaged in a struggle that means we sit down and do nothing. That there's a great deal of difference between non-resistance to evil and non-violent resistance. Non-resistance leaves you in a state of stagnant passivity and deadened complacency, wherein non-violent resistance means that you do resist in a very strong and determined manner. And I think some of the criticisms of nonviolence, or some of the critics, fail to realize that we are talking about something very strong, and they confuse non-resistance with nonviolence.
The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to give Negroes a chance to sit in a segregated restaurant beside the same white man who had brutalized them for 400 years. The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to get Negroes to forgive the people who have brutalized them for 400 years by lulling them to sleep and making them forgetting what those whites have done to them. But the masses of black people in America today don't go for what Martin Luther King is putting down. As you said in one of your articles, it's psychologically insecure, something of that sort. I forget how you put it. But you didn't endorse what Martin Luther King was doing yourself.
I do not reject his goals of full integration and full equality rights for American citizens. Do you reject these
goals? If you
goals?
Don't think that he's walking on the right road, I'm quite sure you don't agree that he'll get to the right place. And if you would classify his method as psychologically unrealistic, I think that if a man's method is psychologically unrealistic, which means the road or the means or the method that he's using, I think as a psychologist, you'd be very doubtful.
I don't think
that he would reach the right.
If anyone has ever lived with a nonviolent movement in the South, from Montgomery on through the Freedom Rides and through the sit-in movement and the recent Birmingham movement, and see the reactions of many of the extremists and reactionaries in the white community, he wouldn't say that this movement makes, this philosophy makes him comfortable. I think it arouses a sense of shame within him often, in many instances. I think it does something to touch the conscience and establish a sense of guilt. Now, so often people respond to guilt by engaging more in the guilt-evoking act in an attempt to drown the sense of guilt. But this approach certainly doesn't make the white man feel comfortable.
It disturbs the other sense, conscience,
and it disturbs this sense of contentment.
Nothing will they ever do. They will always talk it, but they won't practice it. And with the Supreme Court, if the NAACP can tell me that they want a desegregation decision for me, 10 years ago, but yet the schools haven't been desegregated. As I say, this is a victory with no victory. It's a victory that you can talk about, but it's a victory you can't show me. So if you represent the NAACP and you are telling me about this great victory you won for me, when I look at you, I have to conclude that either you have been duped yourself or else you are trying to dupe me. And in most instances where the civil rights struggle is involved, there is no civil rights leader can point to me one concrete gain, practical gain, that black people have made in the civil rights field in this country, not only during the past 10 years, but during the past 100 years.
I don't think there's any real organization to the riots. I think they grow out of the conditions that I've mentioned all along. And as long as these intolerable conditions are there, as long as the Negro finds himself living every day in a major depression, then every city will sit on a powder keg and can explode over the slightest incident. I feel that killing is a very tragic way to deal with any social problem. There is no violent solution to the problem that the Negro confronts in this country. And this is why I have constantly said that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. After all, the Negro ends up on the losing end. We can't win a violent revolution. Most of the persons killed in riots are Negroes themselves. The persons who end up not being able to get milk for their children are Negroes because things where they have to live are destroyed. So there's no practical or moral answer in the realm of violence to the Negro's problem. But I do understand the sociological, the psychological, and the economic reasons.
The problem can be solved. First, the white man and the black man have to be able to sit down at the same table. The white man has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of that Negro. And the so-called Negro has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of the white man. Then they can bring the issues that are under the rug out on top of the table and take an intelligent approach to get the problem solved. That's the only way that they'll ever do it. We need an action program while we are Muslims, while we are Christians, or while we are whatever we are. We still need an action program that will eliminate these evils that are in our community. And this is what we're trying to do with the Muslim Mosque Incorporated.
Do you consider yourself militant?
I can throw myself Malcolm.
Well, I think we have to agree that this appears to be the result of an internal conflict within the black nationalist movement. So I think the first thing that needs to be done is for a conference of goodwill to take place between black nationalist leaders. This was why I suggested a few days ago that the followers of the late Malcolm X and the followers of Elijah Muhammad should sit down at the peace table together, so to speak, and discuss this problem and try to reach some understanding. I don't think, and I'm sure, that nothing can be accomplished by violence. It only leads to new and more complex social problems. I think it is unfortunate for the black nationalist movement. I think it is unfortunate for the health of our nation.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I'm really happy for you. I'm going to let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
I don't know about that end of them. You know, I don't know about that end. No, but in the end, Malcolm X did come out and say that you better kill him before you get to Capitol. Kill him first. Because if you kill King, the nation rises up. I thought that person would send me that clip. Was going to send me that little excerpt. I got one more little Malcolm X piece I'm going to play. This is the last piece you made at the Audubon Ballroom. The last piece you made. Happy belated birthday, Malcolm X.
Distinguished guests,
brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies. I want to point out first that I'm very happy to be here this evening, and I'm thankful for the invitation to come here to Detroit this evening. I was in a house last night that was bombed, my own, but it didn't destroy all my clothes at all, but you know what happens when fire dashes through it. They get smoky. The only thing I could get my hands on before leaving was what I have on now. And it isn't something that made me lose confidence in what I'm doing, because my wife understands, and I have children from this size on down, and even in their young age, they understand. I think they would rather have a father or a brother or whatever the situation may be who will take a stand in the face of any kind of reaction from narrow-minded people, rather than to compromise and later on have to grow up in shame and in disgrace. So I just ask you to excuse my appearance. I don't normally come out in front of people without a shirt and a tie. I guess that's somewhat a holdover from the Black Muslim movement, which I was in, and that's one of the good aspects of that movement. It teaches you to be very careful and conscious of how you look, which is a positive contribution on their part. But that positive contribution on their part is greatly offset by too many other liabilities. Before I get involved in anything nowadays, I have to straighten out my own position, and which is clear, I am not a racist in any form whatsoever. I don't believe in any form of racism. I don't believe in any form of discrimination or segregation. I believe in Islam. I'm a Muslim. And there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. Nothing wrong with the religion of Islam. That just teaches us to believe in Allah as the God. And those of you who are Christians probably believe in the same God, because I think you believe in the God who created the universe. And that's the one we believe in, the one who created the universe. The only difference being, you call him God, and we call him Allah. Jews call him Jehovah. If you could understand Hebrew, you'd probably call him Jehovah too. If you could understand Arabic, you'd probably call him Allah. But since the white man, your friend, took your language away from you during slavery, the only language you know is his language, you know, your friend's language. So you call him, you call for the same God he calls for. When he's putting a rope around your neck, you call for God, and he calls for God. And you wonder why the one you call on never answers you. When I was in the Black Muslim movement, they didn't have the real religion of Islam in that movement. It was something else. But the real religion of Islam doesn't teach anyone to judge another human being by the color of his skin. The yardstick that is used by the Muslim to measure another man is not the man's color, but the man's deeds, the man's conscious behavior, the man's intention. And when you use that as a standard of measurement or judgment, you never go wrong. But when you just judge a man because of the color of his skin, then you're committing a crime, because that's the worst kind of judgment. If you judged him just because he was a Jew, that's not as bad as judging him because he's black. Because a Jew can hide his religion. He can say he's something else, which a lot of them do that. They say they're something else. But the black man can't hide. When they start indicting us because of our color, that means we're indicted before we're born, which is the worst kind of crime that can be committed. Elijah Muhammad had taught us that the white man could not enter into Mecca in Arabia, and all of us who followed him, we believed it. And he said the reason he couldn't enter was because he's white and inherently evil. It's impossible to change him. And the only thing that would change him is Islam, and he can't accept Islam because by nature he's evil. And therefore, by not being able to accept Islam and become a Muslim, he could never enter Mecca. And this is how he taught us. And you know, and so when I got over there and went to Mecca and saw these people who blonde and blue-eyed and pale skin and all those things, I said, well, but I watched them closely, and I noticed that there was, though they were white, and they would call themselves white, there was a difference between them and the white one over here. And that basic difference was this. In Asia or the Arab world or in Africa, where the Muslims are, if you find one who says he's white, all he's doing is using an adjective which, to describe something that's incidental about him, one of his incidental characteristics. So there's nothing else to it. He's just white. But when you get the white man over here in America and he says he's white, he means something else. You can listen to the sound of his voice when he says he's white. He means he's boss. That's right. That's what white means in this language. You know the expression free, white, and 21. He made that up. He's letting you know all of them mean the same. White means free, boss. He's up there. So that when he says he's white, he has a little different sound in his voice. And I know you know what I'm talking about. Despite the fact that I saw that Islam was a religion of brotherhood, I also had to face reality. And when I get back into this American society, I'm not in a society that practices brotherhood. I'm in a society that might preach it on Sunday, but they don't practice it on any day. And so since I could see that America itself is a society where there is no brotherhood, and that this society is controlled primarily by racists and segregationists, and it is, this is a society whose government doesn't hesitate to inflict the most brutal form of punishment and oppression upon dark-skinned people all over the world. To wit, right now, what's going on in and around Saigon and Hanoi and in the Congo and in elsewhere. They are violent when their interests are at stake. But with all of that violence that they display at the international level, when you and I want just a little bit of freedom, we're supposed to be nonviolent. They're violent. They're violent in Korea. They're violent in Germany. They're violent in the South Pacific. They're violent in Cuba. They're violent wherever they go. But when it comes time for you and me to protect ourselves against lynchers, they tell us to be nonviolent. We should defend ourselves. And when I say that we should defend ourselves against the violence of others, they use their press skillfully to make the world think that I'm calling on violence, period. And I wouldn't call on anybody to be violent without a cause. But I think the black man in this country, above and beyond people all over the world, will be more justified when he stands up and starts to protect himself, no matter how many necks he has to break and heads he has to crack. I saw in the paper where they, on the television, where they took this black woman down in Selma, Alabama, and knocked her right down on the ground, dragging her down the street. You saw it. You're trying to pretend like you didn't see it because you knew you should have done something about it and didn't. It showed the sheriff and his henchmen throwing this black woman on the ground. On the ground. And Negro men standing around, doing nothing about it, saying, well, let's overcome them with our capacity to love. What kind of phrase is that? Overcome them with our capacity to love. And then it disgraces the rest of us because all over the world, the picture is flashed, showing a black woman with some white brutes with their knees on her, holding her down, and black, full-grown black men standing around watching it. Why, you are lucky they let you stay on Earth, much less stay in the country. When I saw it, I dispatched a wire to Rockwell. Rockwell was one of the agitators down there. Rockwell, this Lincoln Rockwell. And the wire said, in essence, that this is to warn him that I am no longer held in check from fighting white supremacists by Elijah Muhammad's separatist black Muslim movement, and that if Rockwell's presence in Alabama causes harm to come to Dr. King or any other black person in Alabama who is doing nothing other than trying to enjoy their rights, then Rockwell and his Ku Klux Klan friends would be met with maximum retaliation from those of us who are not handcuffed by this nonviolent philosophy. and I haven't heard from Rockwell since. And brothers and sisters, if you and I would just realize that once we learn to talk the language that they understand, they will then get the point. You can never reach a man if you don't speak his language. If a man speaks the language of brute force, you can't come to him with peace. Why, good night. He'll break you in two, as he has been doing all along. If a man speaks French, you can't speak to him in German. If he speaks Swahili, you can't communicate with him in Chinese. You have to find out, what does this man speak? And once you know his language, learn how to speak his language. And he'll get the point. There'll be some dialogue, some communication, and some understanding will be developed. And you've been in this country long enough to know the language the Klan speaks. They only know one language. And what you and I have to start doing in 1965, I mean, that's what you have to do, because most of us already been doing it, is start learning a new language. Learn the language that they understand. And then when they come upon our doorstep to talk, we can talk. And they will get the point. There'll be a dialogue. There'll be some communication, and I'm quite certain there will then be some understanding. Why? Because the Klan is a cowardly outfit. They have perfected the art of making Negroes be afraid. And as long as the Negro's afraid, the Klan is safe. But the Klan itself is coward. They never come, one of them never come after one of you. They all come together. Sure, they're scared of you. And you sit there when they're putting the rope around your neck saying, "Forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do." As long as they've been doing it, they're experts at it. They know what they're doing. No, since the federal government has shown that it isn't going to do anything about it but talk, then it is a duty. It's your and my duty as men, as human beings. It's our duty to our people to organize ourselves and let the government know that if they don't stop that Klan, we'll stop it ourselves. And then you'll see the government start doing something about it. But don't ever think that they're going to do it just on some kind of morality basis. No. We only mean vigorous action in self-defense. And that vigorous action, we feel, we're justified in initiating by any means necessary. And when we say this, the press calls us racists in reverse. With skillful manipulating of the press, they're able to make the victim look like the criminal, and the criminal look like the victim. Right now, when in New York, we had a couple cases where police grabbed the brother and beat him unmercifully, and then charged him with assaulting them. They use the press to make it look like he's the criminal and they're the victim. This is how they do it. And if you study how they do it here, then you'll know how they do it over here. It's the same game going all the time. And if you and I don't awaken and see what this man is doing to us, then it'll be too late. They may have the gas ovens already built before you realize that they're hot.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Network. Yeah, that was Martin Luther King, I mean, Brother Malcolm X. And I thought that was a speech at Audubon, that speech he did in Detroit 2 months ago. He did that and said it was what it was, but he said what he was at, where he was at. Yeah, on conversation with a coffee chain, a conversation with Dorothy Tillman Saturday, a lot of her callers called in and was requesting, you know, some Malcolm X. And I thought about it, it could lead into our show. Today, Ray Manzarek, I want to say your name right, Ray Manzarek, 74, keyboardist and founder of The Doors, passed away at 74 today.
Ray?
Yeah, Ray. His name is Ray, I know his last name. Now, the reason why this is significant, because he's from Chicago, St. Rita High School, South Side. The South Side, real talk. White Boy was kind of funky in the keyboard and riffs. Better known for, you know, a lot of keyboard songs, but this is one of the ones songs that he's most famous for, and you can hear him exclusively on this one. This is Light My Fire. Night on Fire. But this is my favorite Jim Morrison and Doors cut right here. Rest in peace, Ray. And this is When You're Strange, People Are Strange.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem weird when you're unwanted. Streets are empty when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out and strange.
I'm just
Yeah, that was The Doors. When You're Strange. Give me a minute, everybody. Give me one more minute. Give me a minute. I got my mic down for a second. Give me one quick hot second. All right. Here we go. We back up. Yeah. We said, people remember your name when you're strange. No one knows your name. What's that guy's last name, Ebony? Ray, what is that? Because he's strange. And no one remembers your name when you're strange. Jimmy's Underground Radio Network, 347-838-9825. I will try to probably get another Malcolm X cut for you all tomorrow, because it's interesting hearing the words of great Malcolm X today. So let me take a commercial break, because we went nonstop without a commercial break, and we have to start paying the bills, because that's how we're staying on now. Phoenix Rising.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
I want everybody in the house to say, ho! Yo, Chuck, kick it to him, man.
A ballad behind bars, or you could say real rock from the rock. An unusual musical happening in a most unusual place. The state prison
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and said they were suckers. They wanted me for their army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn, I said never. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me and myself, because they never did. I wasn't with it, but just that very minute it occurred to me, the suckers had authority. Cold sweating as I dwell in my cell. How long has it been they got me sitting in a state pen? I gotta get out, but that thought was thought before. I contemplated a plan on the cell floor. I'm not a fugitive on the run. Brother like me begun to be another one. Public enemy serving time, they drew the line, y'all. They criticized me for some crime. Nevertheless, they could not understand that I'm a black man and I can never be a veteran. On the strength of situations unreal, I got a raw deal. So I'm looking for the steal.
Hey, yo, Chuck, you serious? You in the justice, man?
Word them up. I'm looking for that steal.
Yo, man, we gonna break you out of there, man. We ain't gonna like that, man.
Don't you know? They got me rotten in the time that I'm serving. In the same time they're sewing. Four of us packed in a cell like slaves. Oh well, the same motherfucker got us living in his hell. You have to realize what is the form of slavery organized under a swarm of devils. Straight up, put them up on the level. The reasons are several, most of them federal. Here's my plan anyway, and I say I got gusto, but only some I can trust. Yo, some do a bit from 1 to 10, but I never did, and plus I never been. I'm on a tier with no y'all. For time and time again, time they got me serving to those of them. I'm not a citizen, but ever will. plus a warden to know that I was innocent. Because I'm militant, posing a threat, you better fucking up the government. My plan said I had to get out and break north. Just like Oliver's neck, I had to get off. My boys had the feds in check, they couldn't try nothing. We had a force to instigate a prison riot. This is what it takes for peace, so I just took a piece. Black for black, it's my time to cut the leash. Freedom to get out to the ghetto, no sellouts. 60 O's we got, we ought to put their head out. But I'll give them a chance, cause I'm civilized. As for rest of the world, they can't realize a cell is hell. I'm a rebel, so I rebel. Between bars got me thinking like an animal. Got a woman CEO to call me a copter. She tried to get away, and I popped her twice, right? Never wanna get nice. I had 60 O's, and now it's 5 to go, and I'm serious. Call me delirious, but I'm still a captive. I gotta rap this time to break as time grows intense. I got my steel in my right hand, now I'm looking for the fence.
Hey, yo, Chuck, I got the dope plan in effect. G, word to the stop, man.
I'm looking for that. Into the courtyard, followed by 52 brothers, bruised, battered, and scarred, but hard. Going out with a bang, ready to bang out. The power from the sky, from the tower, shots rang out. A high number of dose, yes, it's something close. I figure I trigger my steel stand and hold my post. This is what I mean, an anti-nigger machine. If I come out alive, then they won't come clean. Then I threw up, my steel bullets flew up. Into my surprise, the wall and tower blew up. Who shot what, who? What the bazooka was who? Into my rescue, it was a S1W. Secure my getaway, so I just got away. The joint broke from the black smoke. Then they saw it was rougher than the average bluffer. Cause the steel was black, the attitude is sex. Now the chase is on, telling you to come on. 53 brothers on the run, and we are gone.
Continue this in the ways of the caddy and survive like a pimp. No jerry curls, wave perms or crimps. The ever nappy so set in the mood. I raise my fuel for my firm attitude. Walking through the streets with my war cry spear. Certain folks know it means doom when they hear. My firm black boots and no spurs attached. But let me give a second cause I might detach ya. My black boots if you confused. I lose my peoples in the words you choose. Provider, what's wrong, my man, what you think? Except my back, so how the hell you just tank? The front page, cause outrage. There's no gauge cause it's time for the Mac. Tune in your radio, video, stereo and all that. To the vibes of the pro-black. It's like that as I wind up my wrist. Check out the smack of the scientific fist. Born on level to the east I flow. Cause in freedom or death there's no choice, you know. Still on the topic of the PRO. On the path of verbs, fix your brother PXO.
Over and under as I progress to this. Got no time to be hanging out with humanists. Raise the flag, five the tag, the hand, clutch the fist. Serving nationally comes for this. Humanity keep us witness, we bread eaters. Milwaukee, the brutality, how can you dismiss? So, off to the road we go, you know. Follow the pro-nigga flow. Off to the road, you know we go. Follow the pro-nigga flow. For you and yours, legislation. Past purpose, agitation. By way of the old order, emancipation. Zoom, 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 revelation. Come as pro-black dedication. The solution, revolution, evolution, the conclusion, the trigger. Please elect by take a swigger. And if you don't get any bigger, yes, I'm that kind
of revolution, evolution, the solution. No amendments and burn the constitution. You check the authors, a bunch of old wiggers who strategize the extension of the pro-black niggas. Know why? Cause I'm that nigga that they can't stand. They teach the African how to say black man. I remember green suits on a black mayor. I remember 9mm child slayers. I remember all the times that you call me an animal. But in Milwaukee there's a cannibal. Check it. Some of the things that you just don't figure. Cause it gets a lot blacker and a whole lot bigger. No matter night sick or bring your brick trigger. Our nation is protected by some pro-black niggas.
Making note of some minors. I'm not talking baseball, because if I was, Brother Jay, we'd be playing professional. There are 9 innings to a baseball game. By the way, is it humanity or is it vanity? Vainglorious, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green. With a key on the road again, city.
Yeah. I had to end it off with some pro-black music, P.E. and the X-Clan. Man, you ain't hear the X-Clan no more at all. Back in the day, you hear them a lot when they had cassettes out. All right, everybody. Tomorrow we'll be dealing with a little bit of that tornado, maybe Benghazi, maybe the IRS, maybe the leaking of the feds, or is all that done? Maybe North Korea launched our missiles. We're going to try to get something on Talk to Me Tuesday, or maybe we might have Angel Garcia, who might be the next Illinois Republican chair, or maybe Senator Oberweis. It's a bunch of people. I got to check my producers. Anyway, everybody, thank you for listening. And like I always say around this time, good night, and may the God that watches over all watches over you, and may the God that leads with you be with you. And may your God be with you, because mine will be with me. Good night, everybody. Take it away, Ebony. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 0.
Thank you, Jesus.